Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is Wonderful.
This is a show where we talk about things that are good, things that we like.
Yes.
Things that we're into. Let's cut the BS. What if this episode from Once We Cut the BS and the baloney and we gave it to you straight?
Well, that is what BS stands for, right? Baloney.
Sandwich.
Sandwich.
BS stands for baloney sandwich. Of course, that's what I learned at church from Pastor Cal. Pastor Cal from Married at First Sight. He was my pastor growing up. He just taught me a lot of really important life lessons.
Can I say something that I follow him on Instagram?
That's exceptional news.
And just the other day, his most recent post was, a lot of people ask, am I really a pastor? And then he like had a clip on his Instagram of him giving a sermon.
I bet he's great at that.
But I still didn't really believe it.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I was like, he probably just put this together.
I have to imagine he is a better pastor than he is matchmaker. Because sort of statistically speaking, him and Dr. Pepper and whatever third expert they rotate in and out on that program, statistically pretty bad, actually.
I think he used to be a pastor.
Okay.
I don't doubt that he didn't, like, used to, you know.
Well, you never get out of the game.
Tread
the boards.
Isn't that what
I don't think he's tap dancing up there.
I mean, in a way.
We're narrow casting pretty hard right now.
I will just say that once you achieve the level of fame that he has, I imagine that you retire your robes, you know?
Yeah, you are sort of defrocked by fame.
Anyway.
Do you have any small wonders to talk about today on the program, please, for me?
I'm going to say daytime television watching, and not specifically daytime programming, but finding a break in your day to watch a television show to watch at night.
I like that.
We have limited access to our television, as we've talked about before, and so I had not watched any of White Lotus, and I just finished the first episode, the second season specifically. Okay. I just finished the first episode today at a little 9:30 a.m. watch.
That's a good time to watch a prestige drama, from what I understand. I've never seen White Lotus. I assume it's a prestige drama. I could be wrong.
I feel like the biggest appeal with that show is that they are in like a exotic resort location and everybody is on vacation and you get to watch it and feel like you are too.
That's fun.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's my small wonder.
I'm going to say Game Sunquick was really good this year. A lot of good runs, a lot of good speed runs. You've heard me talk about that so much on this show. Neon White was a game I got really into last year, which was all about basically speed running as fast as you can. And they made a meal out of that one. That was fun. Every time I have like a little dinner break or something where I'm not watching our children with you, I sneak away in the other room to eat a sandwich, a big sandwich from Jetty's or whatever. Watch a little bit of a speed run. 6 minutes at a time. And that is the way to do it. I go first this week.
Yes.
I'm bringing a music thing, a musical artist who I've only recently discovered. And so his career is gigantic and I do not possess most of the vernacular sort of required. So I'm going to be like a child stumbling in the desert, but I'm very excited about this artist whose name is Jun Fukamachi. He is a Japanese jazz fusion composer, mostly active in the 70s and 80s. And I got served up a track by Jun Fukamachi in my Spotify weekly recommendations, which I've been slipping on, haven't tuned into for a while. And so when I got back on board, it came in strong with this dude and his music that I have become pretty much all in on at this point in my life.
I'm glad that you said that it was from the 70s and 80s, because I listened to it and I was like, what a retro vibe this has.
It is a retro vibe because it is from that time. He is a synth pioneer, which, like, you know, I'm a sucker for, like, the Mort Garson type. He was born in 1946, started studying music basically immediately, went to college for music and dropped out, and then just started shredding on a shoulder-mounted Yamaha synth keyboard, and the rest was history. He composed 48 albums in total, two of which were released post-mortem. He died in 2010. And it's sort of in the same way that, like, Mort Garson got really into synths and then realized, like, hey, I can use these to make a lot of different sounds. And so the type of music that I can create with this is limited only by my imagination. That is very much sort of Jun Fukamachi's vibe as well. And so the type of music that he created really runs the gamut. In the 70s, it was a lot of sort of jazz fusion, funk-inspired stuff. In 1977, he gained sort of some early notoriety after he released an album with Toshiba, which was an all-synth cover album of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, which I didn't know was a thing you could just do. It was just like, hey, everybody, do you like the Beatles? Well, you might like them like this. He did a lot of ambient sort of synth stuff, a lot of sort of background music, a lot of soundtrack work, the biggest of which was for a super long-running Japanese anime series called Space Battleship Yamato. He released a whole album of Space Battleship Yamato music in 1983. That same year, he released an album inspired by a manga series called Queen Emeraldus. The title of that album was Queen Emeraldus Synthesizer Fantasy, which slaps really hard, both the album and title for it. One ambient album of his that I really want to focus on is called Nicole. Jun Fukamachi sort of achieved cult status in America when he composed a soundtrack for a fashion show from a fashion designer named Mitsuhiro Matsuda, who had a fashion line called Nicole, which is very, very powerful that in and of itself. In 1982, there was a Nicole fashion show in New York City that was attended by Andy Warhol and Candice Bergen and other equally famous famos who were just reportedly just entranced by this transportative music that they were hearing and requested the music for more of their shows. And so his music sort of spread throughout the New York fashion scene, culminating in a full album of music inspired by Nicole that he released in 1986 called Nicole 86 Spring and Summer Collection, which is just this super chill atmospheric synth fantasy.
Yeah.
I'll play a little bit of the opening track off that collection called Morning Glow, which is just sort of piano and synth vibes that you can really just bliss out to or sit in like a 1980s dentist's office waiting room to. So that's like one big bucket of his work. He made all of this very just sort of dreamlike synth ambient music. But then also in the 70s, before he kind of got into that, his earlier stuff was all funky as hell, jazz fusion music, a lot of which was inspired by he came to New York and started to work with a lot of New York-based session musicians. Whose names I did not write down for some reason, but he did a lot of work with all these big name jazz session musicians and started to write a lot of music that sounded like a lot of New York American jazz music that was coming out in the 70s and 80s. One of the album of his that was sort of the biggest release during this period was called On the Move. And I'm just going to play a little bit of the title track, the opening track of On the Move, which I sent to you earlier today,
yeah,
was what you, I assume, listened to. We'll be right back. It's so funky.
Yeah.
It's so funky. And pretty much every song on the album has this vibe that is really impossible to describe unless I think you're much, much smarter about this type of music than I am, where just like every 16 measures, it just becomes a new song.
Like
a different sort of time signature sometimes and a different instrumentation. But all of it is so fun and like interesting to listen to.
I felt like when I was listening to it, I felt like this would be a great opening song for like a television show or a movie.
Yeah.
Because it really like, I don't know, it takes you to a very specific place, you know?
It takes you on a journey.
Yeah.
The dude wrote basically 50 albums. So like, I feel, I'm very enthusiastic about his music, but I feel really ill-equipped to give any kind of like biography or summary of his work, because it really was, it was enormous. This man's creative output was gigantic. But I find it really interesting that he was able to gain cult status in the fashion world with this one type of music, and then gain status in the like jazz fusion funk world with this type of music, and then in the soundtrack world with this type of music. All the while, like, composing on this sort of burgeoning new way of making electronic music that I find very exciting. But what's most exciting is, like, I, as a new listener of Jun Fukamachi's music, can just go on YouTube and type this dude's name in and listen to different kinds of music for literally hours. Every day, basically, since I've discovered him, I've just typed in his name on YouTube and just started listening, and I have not gone wrong yet because I'm just really, really, really into all of the different vibes that he was able to capture throughout his career. From a pioneer of a new type of music standpoint, I find him very exciting, but also from just a how is one person capable of writing all of these different kinds of music, being so fucking good at it? I am always going to be very, very on board with that. So that's Jun Fukamachi. Go listen to literally anything. I would recommend starting with On the Move. There's a live album that he did, which I think is called Jun Fukamachi and the New York All-Stars, that has some live tracks off On the Move on it, too. Just join me on this odyssey through this dude's enormous body of work. And before that happens, though, I would like to steal you away. (10) 9 8 7 6 5 4 3 2 1 Blast off into wealth and financial security and responsibility with Rocket Money.
Oh, that's the countdown.
The countdown is for the rocket. Uh-huh. They have to do that because if not, people stand under the rocket of Rocket Money. They get all burnt up dead.
Yeah.
So powerful is the force of this fuel as it's oxidized and ejected. But for you, some people get burnt up by the rocket, but you're going to save a buttload of money on things like subscriptions you don't need anymore that maybe you didn't know you had anymore that Rocket Money can not only identify for you, but also help you get them canceled.
I also get these little notifications that are like, hey, did you know that you spent this much money on this very particular online store? And I'm like, whoa, I am spending too much money in that online store. I would not have noticed it otherwise.
Rachel's candle habit was putting us out of house and home.
Do you know you're spending $750 a month on candles?
Well, not no more, because Rocket Money showed you the error of your ways. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. That is wild. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wonderful. That's rocketmoney.com/wonderful. One last time, rocketmoney.com/wonderful.
Parenting. It's hard, but don't worry. You're not alone. Belly up to the low bar with One Bad Mother and let us remind you that fine is good enough.
They want to climb on different things. And how am I supposed to keep them both from dying?
There is a right way to do this. And if I can figure out that right way, I'm going to be a good parent. So that is not a thing.
So join us each week and let us tell you that you are doing a good job. You can listen to One Bad Mother on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts.
This week on Bullseye, Tom Hanks, as you've never heard him before. Mad.
You moron. Thank you for the use of the turn signal. Way to use your blinker, idiot.
That's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Are you ready?
I am.
My topic is so fun.
Oh, boy.
I'm excited to talk about this with you.
More fun than MC Scat Cat?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if they're in such different categories.
Okay.
But maybe a similar level of energy.
Okay.
Because what I'm talking about this week is the t-shirt cannon.
Oh, my God. Yeah, babe. You done it. Hey, babe, you done it again.
We were watching a hockey game last week, and they were kind of the camera was panned out, and it seemed like everybody was turned staring at the camera.
Staring at us, which was scary. I thought
it was
they were
weird
looking at us.
To watch a sporting event and to have everybody in the audience, instead of turned towards the actual event, turned towards you, the viewer.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is happening? And then I realized somebody was chucking t-shirts out.
I don't believe using a cannon.
No.
I don't think you're allowed to. I don't think it's legal to use a caliber garment rifle at point blank range like that.
Yeah, no, but it did make me think, I wonder what the story is with the t-shirt cannon.
I have to know this
story. Because it's like, it obviously seems exclusive to sporting events. I can't think of many other situations in which you would want a t-shirt fired at you.
No.
I did go, this is Rachel lore, but like it must have been 2008. I went to a filming of a Friday Night Lights episode that was taking place at like the UT football stadium. And they did throw t-shirts at me. And I know because I got hit by one in the head. But it was not a t-shirt cannon, thankfully.
Kyle Chandler threw it.
No, that's not true. Oh my God,
Rachel, really.
If only that were true.
God, I would let Kyle Chandler throw anything.
Then if I ever met him, that would be my
That
would be my in, but no, it wasn't Kyle Chandler.
It's Jesse Plemons.
God, that would be good too.
That would be good. I would let most cast members from Friday Night Lights throw a thing in my head.
But yeah, that's the closest I've ever come to a t-shirt. That was the other thing that I started thinking about was, when there is a t-shirt cannon at a sporting event, I always think about those people who just like unselfconsciously will just wave their arms and jump up and down and shout for this t-shirt.
Right.
I am far too introverted and like too cool for school to like make a big production out of wanting a t-shirt.
Well, I've always theorized that it is a combination of I would like free merch and also someone has a cannon pointed at me. So I am, of course, going to sort of put myself in a very sort of like, I don't know, I'll make myself big to scare the cannon wielder.
It, for me, it's always the people that are like, hey, I would like a t-shirt.
Who wouldn't like a t-shirt?
Well, for me, I'm too meek to be like, to put my wants out
there.
See,
that's why we are a good couple. I'm excellent at expressing my needs in public. Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, the t-shirt cannon. I found a New York Times article from 2013 with somebody who claims to be the inventor of the t-shirt cannon.
Okay.
Now, the t-shirt cannon uses existing technology. So, you know, like a potato gun, for example, similar in model.
It's just compressed air, right?
Exactly, yeah. But the original t-shirt cannon, Tim Dirk, who was the Coyote mascot for the San Antonio Spurs in the 1990s, created one that weighed 90 pounds.
Holy shit.
He said, quote, it was like carrying a TV set on your back. The gun was probably at least 4 feet long. It used a cast iron pipe.
What?
Yes.
So this was a cannon in the traditional sense.
Yes.
This was a Vulcan. This was a flak anti-personnel t-shirt cannon.
Yeah, so he dressed up as Rambo.
Cool.
Which, well, was the Spurs Coyote name. I don't know if this is still true.
I would have no way of knowing.
So he dressed up as a coyote and got it out into the stands. The whole focus prior had been slingshots. Do you remember this as a thing?
Slingshots?
Yeah. No. Like it was like a big like two-person slingshot situation where you would fire shirts out.
It sounds fun.
I remember going to games where this would happen, and I think it still does in some places where instead of a gun, you have like a big slingshot.
I was born onto the battlefield after the invention of the cannon, I suppose.
The slingshot had limited range, and they really wanted to
accuracy. It's hard to aim a slingshot, especially when two people.
Well, they wanted to reach like the cheap seats, you know.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Let's get the people up at the top. You know, you never get anything.
Really blast them.
So he says, Dirk says that him and the Phoenix Gorilla were two of the pioneers.
The Phoenix Gorilla.
Also a mascot for, I'm assuming, basketball, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with the sport.
I'm also not very familiar with basketball, but I don't think there's an NBA team called the Phoenix Gorillas. That'd be cool, though.
Well, but the mascot doesn't always have to match.
I think it's the Suns, the Phoenix Sun. Does that sound right?
That sounds right.
Okay, I don't know.
But here's the thing, like,
gorilla.
It's not like it's the Philadelphia Gritties. Like, the mascot doesn't have to match the name of the
team.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Okay, so in the 1990s, this guy, Tim Dirk, he decides, like, he's going to go into business with this T-shirt cannon. Like,
sure.
This is going to be his thing. And so he created an advertisement dressed in his coyote costume. Pretending to solder the gun in a machine shop himself.
Cool.
But he did outsource. He did not build the machine himself.
That's probably for the best if he didn't know how to do that. That seems like dangerous.
But yeah, it was. It was a CO2 canister, and he wore it backpack style.
Cool.
But it was enormous, as I mentioned. Like, it was a very heavy thing, the 90 pounds with a cast iron pipe. Nowadays, it's, you know,
mostly PVC based, I would assume.
Yeah, it's only a few pounds, but he kind of got it started, and everybody took suit. He in 1996 brought it out, and everybody was like, I've got to have one of those.
Can you imagine being in the crowd the first time a coyote walked out wearing a backpack mounted.
I imagine he had to be like, "These are T-shirts, guys. It's okay. These are T-shirts.
These are going to be T-shirts." He was probably in cahoots with the announcer, who was probably like, "Okay, folks, listen. What is about to happen is going to seem quite scary and upsetting at first blush. This giant wolf man is going to aim a large caliber weapon at you. Do not fear.
Everybody, they're T-shirts. It's okay.
They are T-shirts.
T-shirts.
How fast are they going to come out? We don't know." Because this is new. It's new. It might be fast.
He is.
Don't be afraid, but be sort of aware of
alert.
Your surroundings. Be alert, but not afraid. Maybe a little afraid.
He did test it prior to the game. He went to Coors Field, which is the baseball stadium, and stood at home plate and fired it out into the stands see, like, okay, is this going to work? And it did. Yeah, a bunch of other people followed. Ken Solomon, also known as the Rocky Mountain Lion, was cheering at the Denver Nuggets game and immediately had a friend build him one.
Cool.
And it took off. Then the NBA, the MLB, the NFL, NHL, everybody's got
all
T-shirt cannons now.
Sure.
And they typically weigh like 2 pounds.
Yeah.
Now, technology has advanced significantly.
Can I buy a T-shirt cannon online, do you think? How fucking fun would that be at the next live show? They're just like,
you probably can.
I'm wondering, like, it seems like you should have to get a license.
I know. That's what I'm concerned about. Like, you guys would really have to test it.
Yeah, this is a bad idea and I won't do it because I don't want to be held liable for, you know.
There have been injuries associated with it.
Well, Mott Flanders sort of thing. Got very deeply injured, I would say. To death.
I found them very comical to read about, but I imagine I shouldn't
probably
share.
Not comical to the person who got blasted.
I should not share that information.
No.
But I would encourage you, if you are interested in T-shirt cannon related injuries, to look into it.
Sure. If you're a monster, I guess.
The other thing I wanted to mention, in 2012, the Philadelphia 76ers created their own cannon, which was a 600-pound weapon that could fire 100 shirts every 60 seconds.
That's too much. Why would you need that?
And then the Milwaukee Bucks, shortly after, introduced a triple barrel gun that could propel vests and jackets.
Okay.
Also fired out of a t-shirt cannon include things like hot dogs and popcorn.
I love that.
People have gotten experimental with this, to be sure.
You can buy a t-shirt cannon on Amazon for $800.
I will also say, in 2019, a woman was arrested after being caught trying to deliver contraband, including cell phones, chargers, earbuds, and drugs, by shooting it over the fence of a correction center in Oklahoma with a t-shirt cannon.
Awesome. That's cool.
So everybody apparently has had your idea before of like, I could just buy a t-shirt cannon myself. Not everybody has had the idea to use it.
Yeah.
For illicit materials.
Looks like a lot of people are building their own t-shirt cannons out there. Yeah. $800 seems like a lot of money to spend on a t-shirt cannon.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, if you know somebody who has made or fired a potato gun, like, I imagine it is similar. And as I understand it, potato guns are not too difficult to make.
No.
So, you know, how about it, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I think this is one of those topics that in practice is not good, but in terms of like achievements of the human spirit,
yeah,
it's great that we figured this out, that we that us infinite monkeys typed on infinite typewriters for long enough that one of us invented the t-shirt cannon is good to me.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would like to think that the origins really are wholesome and that mascots really were like, I really want to get more t-shirts out to the people that deserve them further right away. I don't imagine that was actually how this came about, but I am happy that it exists.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that I wish I could time travel back to, like hunter-gatherer early civilization, and when people are like, you know, realizing that clothes are kind of on the that old hierarchy of needs, and being like, yeah, but what if I could shoot them at you?
Yeah, man, talk about fashion shows. How would that would change everything,
that
right?
Would change everything.
Models come down the runway and they're just like, you like this dress?
You like this spring look?
Yeah, t-shirt cannon. That's my wonderful thing.
Thank you, baby. That You're was a welcome. Good one. Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. And thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. Go to MaximumFun.org. Check out all the great shows that they have there. You're going to love the way you look. I guarantee it. I released a bunch of music from Ether-C.
Yeah.
It's on my Bandcamp. Just search. I believe there's a bit.ly link for it, and you can find that, I'm sure, at macroy.family. But it's like 30 songs, and it's a bunch of music, and I'm really proud of it. And all album sales from Adventure Zone in the month of January is going to be donated to Earth Justice, which is a really great nonprofit. We got a bunch of other merch also at macroymerch.com. There's some Flame Bright dice inspired by Taz Amnesty. There's a bunch of great stuff on there. So go check that out. And I think that's it. We'll be back next week to talk about more jazz fusion and shirt weapons.
That's a guarantee.
That's a guarantee.
You heard
this
it here
the
first.
The only thing I want to talk about now is jazz fusion and shirt weapons. So just to keep it locked.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.